for today, and we're going to first begin with a couple of ha'aros relating to last 2 weeks ago shiur. So some questions that came up at the end of shiur, I'm going to try to address them. Then we'll finish up with what we didn't get to last time, and then we'll start with today's shiur, hopefully before the end of class. So at the very end of shiur, last time, a number of people were bothered by the following question. We studied last time about how the Rambam writes of our inability to understand HaKadosh Baruch Hu's essence, even any sorts of positive characteristics are inappropriate insofar as they contradict his unity, his simplicity, his oneness. For example, they imply there is him plus his wisdom, and how, generally speaking, descriptions, positive descriptions, should either be understood as veiled negations or as descriptions of action. Now, what's important to remember is, despite our limitations, our inability to understand his essence or to capture him, describe it using positive terms, clearly we are expected of and capable of having a relationship with him. David HaMelech, as Rambam describes the powerful relationship that tzaddikim like David HaMelech had with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and oftentimes implies that it is a more powerful relationship the more a person understands he can't understand. Now, it might seem strange and unlikely that you could have a passionate relationship with an inscrutable being, but the very fact that Rambam clearly had such a communion attests to the fact that it is indeed possible. To put it a little differently, if it feels like love and it smells like love, it is love, even if it differs from the types of love that we might experience with other people. And thus, the Rambam writes, again and again, ki ha'ava ki fi ha'erech ha'asaga, the ava of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in fact dependent on the level of hasaga of Hashem, and we are able to be ma'asig Hashem, even if we can't fully be ma'asig Hashem, and therefore, one must seek a relationship. Now, I want to first take a moment to address the approach to this question in Kabbalah, because there are a lot of questions about that, and then go back to the Rambam. I shall say that these are things that are above my pay grade, and I don't really understand, but I think that it's worthwhile to try at least a little bit to understand. So I thought we would look at a passage from the Zohar. That's the first source in today's source sheet. And it's a very powerful passage. In fact, it's one that many Sfardim, I believe, say as part of Tefillah, so it's very familiar. And we'll start from where it's bolded on the sheet. See what we can get. Pasach Eliyahu v'Amar. Eliyahu opened and he said, Ribon Almin de'an tuchad v'lo b'chushban. So you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, are one, but not b'chushban, meaning to say, not as something that could be counted. When we use the number one with respect to you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's not the same number that we refer to when we use the one in other contexts. We've discussed this before. There's one pen here in my hand, but it's made of multiple parts and components. It could be broken up. It's one of many other such pens. It's part of something bigger. So when we use the word one with respect to you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we're not using the word one Bechushban, meaning today in cheshbon, in math, the way we usually use the word. On to Ilah, I'll call Ilayin. You are above or high of all the high. You're above all. You're high of the highest of above all those that are high. Stima, I'll call Stimin. You're Sasum, hidden of all those things that are hidden. Less machshava tfisa bach klal. No thought, no machshava can grasp you at all. Antu dafikas eser tikunin. You're the one who, I don't know, dispatched the asara, the 10 tikunim, the 10 rectifications. The karinan lon eser sfirin, and you called them the 10 sfiros. In other words, we call the 10 tikunim the 10 sfiros. Lan haga behon almin, to guide the world. Lost the place. Lan haga behon almin stimin, to lois galion, the almin to iskalion. So to guide both hidden worlds, which aren't revealed, and revealed worlds. Now, the idea here is like this. Eliyahu is saying that, you know, the Ein Sof, you are one, and you created the spheros. The created worlds couldn't handle the light of the Ein Sof, and if they, you know, the Ein Sof would negate those worlds. With respect to the Ein Sof, nothing else could exist. And therefore, the spheros allow for the existence of our world, allow for our own existence, and also allow us to relate to him, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, though not his essence. Uvahon is kasayis mibnei nasha. And with them, meaning with the spheros, with these tikkunim, you conceal yourself from people. Ve'antu dekashir lon umiyachad lon. In other words, like we said, it's only because of the spheros, because you conceal yourself in this way, that we can exist. And you bind them to kashir alone, you bind the spheros, and you unify them. Umiyachid lon, you're miyachid, you make them echad, you make them one. Uvegain de'at milagav, kol man de'afresh chad min chavrei, Ma'alin me'alin eser is chashiv lei kiilu afresh bach, and to the extent that you're within them, so anyone who'll separate one of these 10 spheros from the other ones is considered as though he made a separation within you, because all the spheros stem from the same source, from the Ein Sof. So again, I'm not sure we can understand this either, but what's clear that this passage is emphasizing is that God's absolute oneness and our inability to understand that true essence, v'les pech diyada klal, we can't understand it, and that the plurality implied by the various descriptions of the spheros and the names don't accurately reflect his essence, right? V'chol sfirin kolchad islei shem yadiyah. It continues. I'm not going to read this part. This is a little later, right? Each sphere has its own shame. Uvahon akriu malachia. Ve'ant les lach shem yadiyah. But you don't. Uvacha vach les dimyon v'les diyukna mikol madalagav labar. Right, so there's nothing we could understand, but we have to understand that these spheros, which is what we perceive, is what we relate to, and it's important to perceive them and relate to them, but we understand that that's not you, and you are not subject to division or attributes or the like. And just to maybe one more source, the next source from Tanya, just to emphasize that I think according to you know, I can't can't say that everybody agrees to this, but I think for the most part, there isn't a fundamental difference between the Mikubalim and the Rambam and the like in this question. We'll just see one more source who emphasizes this. So this is from the Alter Rebbe, the second source on your sheet today. He atzmuso mahuso. Kamo shekas Rambam zal shadavar ze in koch befel laomro velo beozen l'shamo velo belev haadam laakiro alborio ki haadam mitzayir hakol kemo shehubo. So what that means is that we anthropomorphize God. We think of God in our own, you know, in almost, you know, create God in our own image. The way we conceive of reality is oftentimes the way we conceive of God due to our own inherent limitations. Now, again, we can know that that's not true. We can know that, as we've been saying, that we can't truly understand his essence, and the terms that we use, the positive traits and the like, don't reflect his essence and the like. All that's true, but at the same time, we do create God in our own image, because that is what we're able to relate to. Aval be'emes HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ram v'nisa v'kadosh u'muvdal riboy revavos ad ein kates v'tachlis madregos havdalos me'erech v'sod u'min kol ha'tishbachos v'hamalo sh'yuchu ha'nevi'im l'hasiv l'tzayir v'sichlam. So the spheros give us the tools to appropriately and constructively relate to him and think about him, but we have to ultimately remember that the spheros aren't him, as we saw in that passage from the Zohar. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the spheros, and the spheros and their existence allow us to exist and allow us to relate to him, but they're not him. In fact, I think, as we mentioned last time, in a sense, many of the Mekubalim go further than the Rambam in not even allowing for a negative attribution. Even the idea, and this gets into a broader space, broader discussion, which I don't think for now, but the idea of the tzimtzum, which is what allows for our existence, is not real. It's an illusionary concealment. Tzimtzum isn't really tzimtzum, but it's what, because you couldn't have true tzimtzum, he can't really be mitzamtzem himself. But again, it's what we relate to. It's a tzimtzum that we perceive, which allows for our existence. So having said all this, the question again that many people asked last week was, you know, so why do we have so many positive attributions and descriptions of God, right? If positive descriptions are false, why are they so pervasive? So I'd like to look at a piece on this topic from Rav Dessler. That's the third piece that you have with here today. And maybe I'll summarize it first, and then we'll look at it inside. We have to relate to HaKadosh Baruch Hu on two levels simultaneously. If we don't anthropomorphize God to some degree, we won't love him, we won't be able to fear him, we won't be able to even appreciate that he exists. When the Torah says that man was created in the image of God, Rav Dessler says it means he was endowed and capable of inculcating those very attributes that are exhibited when HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs the world. And therefore, because we're inspired by tangible and concrete things, so Memela, that's what we have to think of God in those terms. So if we only think of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in negative traits, then we'll remain distant and unloving. And that's why the Torah describes him as in positive traits. He's merciful and just and kind and even angry. And that's because that's the way we think. So if you think you're going to be able to relate to HaKadosh Baruch Hu without them, you're probably denying your own humanity and you won't properly love and fear him. At the same time, if we corporify him entirely, we'll be left with a false conception. So we have to corporify him in a certain sense. We have to anthropomorphize. But we also have to understand that they're false. They're negations, or they're analogies, or they're descriptions of his actions, not his essence. Essentially, what Rav Dessler is going to write, we're going to see in a second, is that we have to simultaneously appreciate these two realities. We have to relate to his descriptions as both positive and negative. And if we're capable of doing this, if we put each one in its proper place, then we'll have a proper relationship with God. And then he gives a tremendous mashal, which we'll get to in a second. So let's take a look here. Yesh hasagos chiyuvios v'shlilios. Hasaga chiyuvis keitzad. Kvodu yisbarach mezgal alanu b'derech tziur al pi kochosav umidosav. Kshanu koren lakadosh baruch hu chasid, rachman, gibor, balchema. Mitztaklim anu bo yisbarach b'vchina chiyuvis. So when we call him these names, like a Rahman, so we're looking at him in with positive attributions and characteristics. Tarim elu yesh lahem muvan biyachas al midosav v'kolchosav. V'kach no elanu, ki aleinu lach koru lizbonin ulitzayir la'atzmenu es hanhagaso yisborach al pi amidos v'kolchos asher sam banu. Harei L'shem kach nitnu k'dei lachshov l'sponin al yadam. V'al zenema b'tzelem elokim asas adam shu nivra b'kolchos gashmiyim v'ruchaniyim hamakablim hamakbilim l'midos al yonos hamisgalos b'hashkachaso v'hanhagaso yisparach el hanivrayim. Now there's a Kadosh Baruch Hu relates to humanity in a certain way, and we should perceive him as such and in fact emulate those. More on that in a minute. Hasaga shlilis keitzad. So that's hasaga chiyuvis. What's hasaga shlilis? Zu hayidia brura sha'achar kol ha'amor. After all that's been said in terms of these positive characteristics, ein ha'machshava tofesis bo klal. But the reality is that he's not shayach to machshava. Kach es kiru pesach aliyahu ve'amru shekol asfiros Ofane giluye midosav yisborach enan ela mastiros es amitas mahuso. The spheros are there to be mastir him, to hide him. They aren't him, they're there to hide him. V'kach b'yara Rambam b'chelek aleph of Marnevuchim perek nun ches shelo nitan lanu lahasig es mahuso yisborach. We can't understand his mahus. V'alkein einachon al piasecha liached lo toarim chiyuviyim klau ela toarim shliliyim. So the only correct thing to do is to use negative traits. L'mashal, k'sheomrim shehu nimtza, when we say he exists, ha'inyan hu she'enu nadar. Truth is, that's false, as we saw in the Rambam. He doesn't exist. His existence should be understood as a negation, that he's not non-existent. Tachlis hagisha shlilis hazos lefi Rambam sham hi liasher es hasechel el amunas haachtos hagmura ki im nishtamesh b'tarim chiyuviyim yesh makom lito shenimtzayim bo yisparach harkava haishtanos v'hariboy. Because when we use these positive traits, then we can falsely conclude that in fact there's multiplicity, etc. within him. Ma she'ein okein b'tarim hashlilim hamarchikim es hariboy v'gam magdishin kama anu rechokim mi kol hasaga b'mahusa yisbaracha ne'lemes mi kol nevrayim. Okay, that's enough. Shechaim says in the next paragraph. Let's just skip two paragraphs. En kol stira ben shnei ofanei hasaga. There's no stira between these two mehalchim in terms of understanding him. Shtehan nitzrachos b'mekomen. Each one is necessary. We have to have both. Each one in its proper place. Umis achdos betachlisan. Kula nitnu lanu letzarach avodaseinu. Right? We need both in our avodas Hashem, and they're both correct in their proper place. Yisod hu etzleinu sheina nefesh mispa'elas el al yidei tziurim chiyuvim. We're only going to be inspired with positive characteristics and descriptions and the like. Kigod tziur gadlos Hashem mul kanuso. To think about God's greatness with respect to and compared to our smallness. Ki anafesh lo tisbar lemaisa ki em behirgisha es ha'inyanim be'ofen muchashi. If things aren't tangible, we will not be moved. We won't be inspired. Ulashem kach nidrashos lanu hasagos me'en elu. Lumasos, at the same time, nidrashos lanu hasagash lilis. We need that hasagash lilis. We need to look at HaKadosh Baruch Hu from the perspective of appreciating that these descriptions are in reality negations. Hamufshetes kedei latzilenu mehakshamas haborechas v'chalila. Because if we emphasize the positive too much, we'll end up corporifying HaKadosh Baruch Hu chas v'shalom. Ulgalus lanu es chesroneinu v'katnos erkenu mul haboreis baruch shemo chisaron she'enu rak b'ofen yachasi El of the Ofen Muchlat. And he gives a very nice example in the next paragraph. I'll just say it outside, a mashal. Right? So HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Gemara, describes the din on Rosh Hashanah in two ways. As taking place when HaKadosh Baruch Hu looks at each one, each person individually. He judges each person individually, like a shepherd counts his sheep. And also that HaKadosh Baruch Hu judges instantaneously, everybody at the same time. So, it's a stira, right? How do we understand these two descriptions of din on Rosh Hashanah, which are very much at odds? And the answer is, of course, we need both. Because as humans, when we think of the idea of judging a lot of things all at once, so that makes us think of a superficial judgment. It makes us think of overlooking details and seeing the group, because that's what happens when we look at a bunch of things at once. So that's not true. HaKadosh Baruch Hu judges each person as they are, as individuals. There's nothing superficial about it at all. And to express that, the analogy is given that HaKadosh Baruch Hu judges us one at a time, like the shepherds. The analogy is not only coarse, but it's false, because it implies that HaKadosh Baruch Hu judges within time one thing after another, which is utterly repugnant. There's no such thing. HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't exist within time. He can't judge, doesn't judge one person after another. All that is false. But it's important for us to think in those terms, because on Rosh Hashanah we need to really appreciate the extent to which we're being looked at as individuals, and that everything we've done is being examined. And so the mashal that we use is of HaKadosh Baruch Hu judging each person one after another. So, but because that's also false, we also say HaKadosh Baruch Hu judges everybody instantaneously and simultaneously. We need, Dessler writes, to have in our mind both images. If we only have in mind one image, if we only have in mind HaKadosh Baruch Hu judging everybody one after another, then we're going to corporify HaKadosh Baruch Hu and our conception of him will be utterly false. If we only have the image of his judging us in an instant, we won't appreciate the gravity of the judgment and its specificity and individual nature. So we have both. And the point is, just go to the last paragraph. Irvos tchumim zeh hu shoresh hatmius she'anu nitkalim ba'em b'machshavteinu. ומקור הבעיות שלכאורה פתרונן רחוק מהשגתנו, כגון איך ליישב הסתירות הכרוכות בגדרי עניינים ההפכיים, צמצום מול בלתי בעל תכלס, בחירה מול סיבו מסובב וכדומה. עלינו לדעת ולהכיר שהציור החיובי הוא הגילוי הנכון לפי מדרגתנו. So these positive descriptions of HaKadosh Baruch Hu are true for us in our madrega. Ve'amiti lefi metziusenu, and they're true with respect to the way we think of things. And it's not a stira. We need both, and we need to put each one in its tchum. And if one of them is lacking, so then our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu will be warped and incomplete. I should note that though we've seen in the Rambam and other thinkers the idea that positive characteristics of HaKadosh Baruch Hu are impossible, there are thinkers that disagree. The Tashbates, for example, as Gabe was telling me and I was reading in the fifth chapter of the first section of Magen Avos, allows for certain types of positive attributes that don't contradict his unity or corporeality. For example, I think he says we can say that he exists, right? And that's positive, as opposed to the Rambam. The Rambam would say when we say he exists, that shouldn't be understood positively, it should be negatively. He doesn't not exist. And we can say that he exists. His existence is necessary. It's a source for all else that exists. When we talk about his existence, it's not the same as when we think about our existence or the existence of this table, because our existence, the existence of the table, are a dependent existence. His existence is independent. He's the source for all that exists. Or, another example, we can say that he's one. And again, this is positive. Not just that there's no complexity or no multiplicity, but again, we have to appreciate that his oneness is different from every other oneness in that it's inherently one. It can't be divided. It's simple. Tashbates emphasizes that the Shem Havaya, Yudke Vavke, reflects his essence. The truth is the Rambam does seem to agree to that in Chelak Aleph Samach Beis. Whereas other names of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, like Elokim or Shakai or Aleph Dalad Nun Yud, all of which reflect his actions. The Tashbates goes back and forth about certain ones. Initially, he thinks that characteristics such as wise could be understood as negations, like the Rambam maintains. And then he says, no, maybe they could be understood in a positive way, in a sense that doesn't imply multiplicity. In other words, we could say HaKadosh Baruch Hu is wise without implying that there is him and his wisdom, because since his wisdom, unlike our wisdom, stems from him, so then it's not problematic to say he's wise. The Tashbate says there are certain types of statements that are relational statements, altsad ha'tstarfus, that don't imply complexity or multiplicity. Things like kel elyon al kol ha'aretz, or gadol Hashem mikol Elohim, mikol Elohim, where he's compared to something else. He says when we say he's eternal, that certainly can't be understood positively, because that implies that he exists within time, so that should be a negation, meaning to say to preclude change. So there are thinkers that say positive attributions are correct. But it's very important to remember, as far as I could tell, let's say looking at the Tashbates, is the Tashbates doesn't think there's any fundamental disagreement between he and the Rambam. In other words, everyone agrees to his oneness, to his unity, to his simplicity. Their debate is really in the field of logic and sometimes in the field of semantics, meaning to say, what are the logical implications of God's oneness and simplicity vis-a-vis positive attributions? So in a sense, I think their debate is much more, again, in the realm of logic than in the realm of Torah or theology or the like. Because everybody agrees to the notion that he is one, that he's incorporeal, that it's just, you know, the question is there a way to describe him in a positive sense that doesn't contradict that unity or incorporeality or simplicity or the like? The next question that was addressed at the end of Shir last time was the obvious question of, if we can't understand him, then why should we even try? What does that mean? Right? So we've seen the Rambam, we've seen the Mekubalim, all of whom say that we can't understand him. And at the same time, the Rambam and the Mekubalim all say, we really, really, really have to try to understand him. That's our Ikar Avoda, right? Just to fully appreciate it, that we've seen so many things along these lines, listen to the lesson of the Rambam in Shmona Prakim Parkei. Rowi la'adam lehavid kochos nafsho kulam lefi hadas. So everything you do in life should be towards the following goal, which is to understand HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Ritzoni lomar yediyaso v'yasim pe'ulosav kulan tnuosav menuchosav v'chol diburav Mevian elzos hatachlis ad shelo yeh bepilosav b'shum panim davar mipoel hahevel ritzoni lomar poel asher lo yeh bielzos hatachlis. A person should make sure that every single act they do in life is directed towards yediyas Hashem. Right, so this is very important. So the same Rambam that says we can't understand him is the one that's saying that every single thing we do in our entire life, without exception, should be directed towards understanding him. So obviously it's not a stira. And I think there's two ways that we could think about it. Number one is, and we'll elaborate upon each one, I'll just say them outside first. Number one is that there are things we can't understand. And number two is that the pursuit itself of this unreachable goal is valuable in its own right and something we must pursue. So let's look at each one at a time. The first point is, what can we know? So we've been seeing that we can't understand God in the sense that we can't even partially understand him. We can't attribute, in a true sense, positive attributes to him, whether essential or accidental. All this contradicts his oneness and his incorporeality. But there's a mitzvah to know HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And as we saw in the Rambam, this mitzvah is included in the mitzvah of Anochi, of Shema, of Yichud Hashem. Right? The five mitzvot all relate to Yediyas Hashem. And the answer is very simple, that while we can't know his essence, there are basic truths that are knowable, as we read several weeks ago when we read the first parak of Yesodei HaTorah, Luchos Yesodei HaTorah. We're able to know and prove even of his existence, his oneness, that he's the cause of all else that exists, his incorporeality. And there's many, many true things that we can know of God. Thus, even though it's limited, it doesn't mean that there's nothing that we could understand. And moreover, the Rambam stresses again and again that it's our idea of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that stays with us forever. And therefore, it's the most valuable pursuit we can do. Another important thing that we saw referred to before in Dessler and is a point that the Rambam stresses a lot, is that even though we can't know God, we are able to emulate his ways, to perceive his ways and emulate his ways. And that's really what we saw in the final chapter of Mor Nevuchim that we did a couple of weeks ago, which is that we know him through his ways, and these are the ways by which we are meant to emulate. So that's A. There are many things that we can know, true things that we can know of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Number two is I think, a very powerful idea. Maybe we'll just take a look at this passage from Reb Nachman. Obviously, this is deep Kabbalah, and we're not really going to understand it, but I think he really powerfully expresses this dilemma. So this is the last source from today's sheet. Da sheyesh or there is a light, shehu lamala minafshin veruchen u'neshmasin, that is above the nefesh, ruach, u'neshama. There are five components of our soul. The three lower ones, the nefesh, ruach, u'neshama, which are each one one higher than the other one, are aspects of the neshama that we could at least to some degree relate to. And then the two higher levels, the chaya and yechida, are really beyond the ability for at least most people to relate to. Vihu or Ein Sof. So there's a light above this, the or Ein Sof. V'afal pi she'ena seichel masigo so. Our seichel's not able to understand it, to grasp this light. Afal pi chein redifas redifa de machshava lemirdaf abasrei. So we should, and we can run after it. We should pursue it. V'yadea redifa, through the chase, through chasing after it. As haseichel masig oso b'vchinas mati v'lo mati. Right? So then, through that chase, we're able to grasp an aspect of it through mati v'lo mati, reaching but not reaching. Ki be'emes yi'efshel hasig oso. In other words, it is lo mati. We can never get there. We'll never reach it. Ki hu lamala mi nefesh ruach u'neshama. In other words, the experience of trying to get to what we can't achieve is something that's inherently valuable. And when we pursue that unreachable goal, we will really accomplish tremendous things. Now, it's very important, something that the Rambam stresses again and again, is that we have to know our limits. We can't go too far. The Rambam writes that all of the emphasis in the Torah given around Matan Torah, about making the gvula, making the fences around Har Sinai, and Moshe going back and forth and reminding the people, don't go too far. And in fact, certain people did go too far. Right? All that, we have to know our limits. We can't ask questions that will lead us to places that we can't perceive. So we must make sure that we don't overstep our limitations. But at the same time, even though that's true, when we appreciate that, the chase, the search, is very, very powerful. And I think there's a beautiful mashal that the Baal Shem Tov gives to this, and this should really be our attitude towards how we pursue this goal. And this is the third source from last week's sheet. Not last week, 2 weeks ago. If anyone doesn't have that, that's the one with like all the small print in the columns. I have some extra copies. The one, it's in the left, it's on the left column, the third source from Kesser Shem Tov. So again, if anyone needs... What?
This one, this one?
Yeah. As you see, we're now almost at the beginning of last week's shir. Last time shir. So this is, it's really a beautiful piece from the Kesser Shem Tov. Which is an early sefer from the Talmidim, the Baal Shem Tov. Okay. Meya Besht. Bier Halavai Osi Azavu V'Tarasi Shamaru. It's Yushalmi says, right? Halavai Hashem says, they would have abandoned me and observed my Torah. Perush. Ki ayidia shelo neida. Amnam. Now, we have to appreciate that yidia. We have to appreciate that we can't appreciate. We have to have that yidia that we can't know. We can't know HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Amnam, yesh beis sugim shelo neda. There are two types of people who don't know. Echad, miyad she'eno nichnas, lach kor v'leida, me'achar di'efshar leida. The first person says, you know what? You're never going to be able to understand. So he doesn't even bother trying. You know, why should I try? I'm never going to get there. Sheni, the second type of person, shechoyker v'doresh ad sheyeda she'efshar leida. He investigates, he pushes, he lurks, he looks, he searches, until he realizes that he can't know. He gets as far as he can get. The hefresh bein zeh lezeh, mashal ma davar doma. So what's a mashal to appreciate the difference between these two people? Shnayim shirotin leida samelach. Two people want to know the king. V'achad nishchanas b'chol chedrei hamelech. One of them goes in to the various rooms of the king. Think about the mashal that the Rambam has of the palace. V'nene me'otzrei v'heichalei hamelech. He gets tremendous hana. He sees the beautiful rooms, the splendid palace. V'achar kach lo yuchal leida hamelech. And then, you know, he gets to a certain point and he can't go any further. The king is behind a screen which he can't penetrate. Vasheni Amar, the second guy says, Me'achar she'yesha leida melech, since I'm never going to really know the king anyway, lo nichnas klali, doesn't bother entering the palace. L'chedrei melech, v'lo neida miyadi, just doesn't know. Uvzei yuvan vadai b'shnei asugim anal. Osi azavu meleida she'yeshar, right, that's what it means in the pasuk. No, al derech hamelitza halavai osi azavu mitoch hachakira vayedia achar shetorasi shamoru. In other words, I want osi azavu halavai osi azavu. Right, the Baal Shem Tov is trying to explain the pasuk. It doesn't make any sense. Halavai osi azavu. What Hashem wants us to be ozev ba'pitom. The answer is no. Yeah, halavai osi azavu. He wants us to give up at a certain point when we realize we could go no further, but coming from a place of Tairasi Shamaru, coming from a place of our being Shomer HaTorah, are trying to come close, not to give up before we've even started, because like we've said, the pursuit, the chase, the mati velomati, so there's tremendous things accomplished through that. Okay. Now, with this in mind, we could get to what I really was planning to get to last time, but I wanted to get to today. So, this is a very, very important question, which is, having established the problematic nature of positive attributions, so we've explained what they mean. They shouldn't be taken literally, etc., etc. Well, what happens if a person does? What happens? How do we treat a person who calls HaKadosh Baruch Hu merciful and means it entirely in its simple sense, unaware that such a statement contradicts his unity? Now, next week, I think, we'll talk about this from a different perspective with respect to Hashem's incorporeality. What happens if HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if a person thinks HaKadosh Baruch Hu has a physical body, they daven, thinking HaKadosh Baruch Hu in physical terms, how do we treat such a person? But this is a slightly different question, as we'll see. Or might be, that's the Shaila. But perhaps this is a slightly different question in terms of positive characteristics. Why might it be different? Because as we'll see in the Rambam, there's no question that corporeality is heresy. What about someone who thinks HaKadosh Baruch Hu has positive traits? And this is a very tricky question. On the one hand, as we saw a couple of weeks ago, if you think HaKadosh Baruch Hu has positive traits, you're contradicting his incorporeality, his unity. It's a stira. You might not realize it's a stira, but it is a stira. And therefore, maybe it should be treated in the same way as someone who believes God has some type of physicality. But perhaps there's a difference. So to solve this problem, if we're going to solve it, I'd like to first look at passages in the Rambam where there's evidence that positive attributes are equivalent to belief in corporeality and therefore would constitute heresy. And then we will look at evidence for the opposite, that there's a very big difference between corporeality and positive characteristics, and then we'll suggest a mahalich. So we're going to start with passage 160, which is on the left side of the sheet from what we gave out two times ago. And basically what the Rambam is going to say over here is that someone who thinks God has positive attributes is an unconscious atheist. As the Rambam is going to put it, he has abolished his belief in the existence of God without being aware of it. And so let's take a look. It's a tremendously scary piece. Now, I'm not going to read the whole thing, 160. As you can see, it goes on for most of the first page and this first half of the second page. I'm going to read from just a couple of passages, especially from where it's underlined. But you should read the whole thing. For he whose knowledge concerning a thing is insufficient understands one part of it while he is ignorant of the other. As, for example, a person who knows that man possesses life but does not know that man possesses understanding. In other words, we all know that I could understand part of something, right? I know about elephants. I know certain things about elephants, and I don't know other things about an elephant. I know that their skin is gray, and they have a trunk, and that's how they suck in water and the like. And I might even have some mistaken notions about elephants. Like, I might think that they're very slow, and in fact, they could run pretty fast. But you wouldn't say that my limited knowledge means I don't know what an elephant is. I know what an elephant is. I could identify an elephant. I could describe an elephant correctly. And there are things about an elephant I don't know, and there might even be some mistaken aspects to my understanding. But in reference to God, in whose real existence there is no plurality, it is impossible that one thing should be known and another unknown. Similarly, he who associates an object with the properties of another object conceives a true and correct notion of the object and applies that notion also to the other. While those who admit attributes of God do not consider them as identical with his essence, but as extraneous elements. Again, he who conceives an incorrect notion of an object must necessarily have a correct idea of the object to some extent. He, however, who says that taste belongs to the category of quantity has not, according to my opinion, an incorrect notion of taste, but is entirely ignorant of its nature, for he does not know to what object the term taste is applied. So let's continue the mashal with an elephant. Let's say I meet someone. He's never seen or heard of an elephant. So I say, let me tell you about elephants. This is more or less the Rambam's mashal. It shows you even the Rambam is pretty funny. So it's over here. He says, let's imagine I tell this person, an elephant is an animal with one leg, three wings, lives deep in the sea, has a transparent body, the face, form, and shape of a man, speaks like a man, sometimes flies in the air, sometimes swims like a fish. Okay, good. So would we say that that person knows what an elephant is? Right? He'd say, I know what an elephant is. Just that he knows what an elephant is. He's just, you know, a little bit inaccurate in his understanding of an elephant, or would you say he has no conception of what an elephant is because there's no connection between his perception, his understanding of an elephant, and what an elephant actually is? Clearly the latter, right? We would not say that person knows what an elephant is. He would think he knows what an elephant is, but he in fact does not. He has no clue what an elephant is. And that's because his mistaken understanding of an elephant are so fundamental that that we would say doesn't have a knowledge of an elephant. So the Rambam over here writes that the same thing is true with respect to someone who believes God has positive characteristics. His understanding of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is so utterly false that he doesn't know what God is. He says he knows what God is. He is an unconscious atheist because the God that he believes in doesn't exist. The God that exists, he doesn't believe in. Likewise, in Mor Nevuchim Chelek Aleph Perek Samech, which you have, it's the same thing. We'll get to none in a minute. Let's actually go to what he says in Perek Nun, page 2, on the right column. We'll look at in English. So here the Rambam writes, I'll just read again one couple sentences. Those who believe that God is one and that he has many attributes declare the unity with their lips and assume plurality in their thoughts. Right? And he says that even when they say Shema, so they're saying Hashem Echad, right? They have a lot of Kavanah, Hashem Echad, but they think he has positive attributes. So they're declaring his unity while they think he is, in fact, has plurality. So it's of little value. So from these two prakim, one would get the impression that there is no difference between believing in a corporeal God and believing in God that has positive attributes. However, I think there's a lot of evidence to counter this conclusion. Number one is that the Rambam, when he lists the Yud Gimel Ikari Amuna, he doesn't mention God's lacking attributes as he stresses his incorporeality. In Mishneh Torah, when he describes the basic beliefs a person believes in and false beliefs which make a person a heretic and hopeless tshuva, he doesn't mention anywhere in any of his halachic works the problem with positive attributes. And, you know, the reason why the Rambam stresses incorporeality so much, he says, is because it was rampant at his time, and therefore it's very important to uproot that very problematic belief, right? So the Rambam is always stressing it. Well, I imagine that a belief in positive attributes was also pretty rampant in Rambam's time, probably even more so. And yet the Rambam doesn't make the efforts in Perusha Mishnah and in Mishneh Torah to uproot that. If the Rambam really felt what he feels about incorporeality, which is if someone is a pious person but believes in a corporeal God, so he's not going to get Olam Haba. That's what at least he seems to believe. We'll talk about next week whether that's really true, according to the Rambam. But if that same thing was true with respect to positive characteristics, so you would expect the Rambam to write all over the place that you can't believe in this, and if you do, it's heresy, and God doesn't. But he doesn't. He doesn't. So I think that very powerfully, points to the fact that there is a difference. Again, and I think, so then the question, of course, is what's the difference, right? In other words, from a logical perspective, believing in God having a physical body contradicts his oneness, and believing that God has positive characteristics contradicts his oneness. So why should there be a difference? We're arguing that there's a very big difference between the two. The Haraya and Perusha Mishnayos and Mishneh Torah, he emphasizes one, he doesn't say the other. Great. But why should there be a difference? The logical fallacy is identical. And I think there are a couple of very big differences. Number one is, and I would call this the difference between halachic heresy and philosophical heresy. There are halachic implications to being a heretic, right? The tefillin he writes are invalid. His shechita is invalid. The wine he touches is asur. And therefore, whenever the Rambam discusses halachic heresy, he gives guidelines, including belief in God's incorporeality. So there's a naftamina, and the Rambam stresses it. The Rambam, in his halachic works, doesn't stress the falseness of positive characteristics because there are no halachic implications. It's not halachic heresy. It's philosophical heresy, but it's not halachic heresy. And therefore, the person, the sofer, who believes that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is truly a Rahman, in a positive sense, his tefillin are kosher. So he doesn't write that. Now, why should there be a difference? Again, logically, the Rambam clearly says there isn't a difference. So there's a couple of differences. Number one is that the Torah itself, again and again, stresses the falseness of corporeality. Just take a look at the final sheet on the Rambam here from a couple of weeks ago. Harei mefurish b'Torah, this is from Hilchos Yesod HaTorah, Harei mefurish b'Torah v'Nevi'im, Shein HaKadosh Baruch Hu guf u'gvia, Shenemar ki Hashem hu Elokim b'Shamayim mimal v'Aretz mitachas, V'aguf lo yeh b'shnei mekomos, V'nemar ki lo re'isem kol t'muna. The Torah emphasizes when recalling Ma'amad Har Sinai, ki lo re'isem kol t'muna. In other words, you didn't see anything because there is nothing to see. V'nemar ve'almiti demyuni v'yashaveh, v'ilu hayaguf, hayadom elashar gufim. So there's a isser in the Torah to think of God in corporeal terms. The Torah again and again emphasizes that. It's not just the Torah, but as the Rambam notes, Unkulos and Targum Yonasan ben Uziel, again and again, take away all traces of corporeality. So from a halachic perspective, there's no excuse. You know, anyone who learns Shnai Mikra, which you have to do, will not think that God is a goof, because he'll read the Targum and he'll understand the meanings of these psukim. And the Torah says you can't believe it. So if you don't, you're a kofar. And that's not just that. A 12 or 13-year-old child, a bar and bas mitzvah kid, can understand that God exists and is incorporeal. But it's exceedingly hard to appreciate why it is that God's oneness contradicts the notion that he could be a Rahman. To understand why positive attributions contradict divine unity is something that you could study enough philosophy and you might understand, but it's not something that's shayach to as a basic aspect of emunah. And that being the case, it's not shayach that they have the same thing. So, yes, that's philosophical heresy, but it's not halachic heresy. And therefore, the Torah treats the person totally differently. A person should study philosophy and should understand that positive contributions are wrong. But if you don't, you're not a kofar. But if you don't appreciate that he's incorporeal, well, you have no excuse. The Torah tells us he's incorporeal. The psukim stress, ki lo re'isem kol t'muna, Tarbel Onkelos does. And therefore, these two ideas are totally different. All right, we're going to elaborate on this next week, Be'ezras Hashem. I see there are a lot of questions, so maybe come up and ask them. And Be'ezras Hashem will continue.
What would the Zohar that we read, the very first Zohar, say about Echad Miyodea? About saying one is Hashem, right?
What's the problem?
I mean, you said that, like, because in that one it's just Shema Yisrael. If this one we're comparing it to other numbers. Two are the tablets, three are the fathers, four are the mothers. So those are all counting, as opposed to,
right? If they're wrong. So that's what I think. That was the point I was trying to bring out here with Dessler, which is that we need those types of songs are very valuable to us.